It's a great honor and privilege to be here today. My family joined me, my husband Revy, and then my oldest Jeshu, my middle child Janessa, and then my youngest is four. I'll get in trouble if he hears that. And he is now in the children's ministry because his patience has worn out. And probably, let's be honest, my patience for him being in here has probably worn out as well. I think it's a great honor and privilege for Safe Haven to have us here. Thank you, Pastor Ron, for having us. We thank you, North Umpqua Bible Fellowship, for your continual support of Safe Haven. We have a handful of churches, I'd say, is our core church support here in Douglas County, and North Umpqua Bible Fellowship is one. We have advisory board members. I have leaned heavily on Pastor Ron and given him many phone calls when situations arise, and unfortunately these situations seem to be arising more and more frequently, so my phone calls tend to get more and more often. But we have other advisory boards. Those are the ones that really help me make those decisions, really pertinent, difficult, and often legal decisions that I have to make for the agency. We also have members of the board of directors. We have regular volunteers. We have financial partners. So all of you guys, we just really thank you for your support, your backbone that you've given to Safe Haven that enables us to do what we do. So as a church that you've probably, a lot of you have heard of Safe Haven Maternity Home, and the name kind of gives it away a little bit of what we do, but you may not fully understand what we do. So I get to share with you today what we do. So history for this, this agency in some ways has its roots in 1988. It started at St. Joseph's Maternity Home with the Catholic Church in town. They started as a home for teen moms. They would come in if they were pregnant, and once they had the baby, they'd be gone. It's just a place for them to have their child, to sometimes, even back then, the shame of having a teen pregnancy was a lot greater than it is today. So they would come into the home, have their baby, and then they would move on, and we would have more and more girls coming in that way. In 1992, they realized that this was not something they were able to underwrite and fund anymore. And so Safe Haven Maternity Home came into existence. We incorporated, became an agency, and how we did things started changing. We started seeing that there was more help that needs, that once a mother has a baby, for all of us who've had children, you realize those first months are very critical and exhausting, and if you don't have those resources and you're trying to do it all alone, sometimes it's next to impossible to, if you have no skills to raise a child, no skills to even live on your own, it's a very difficult thing. So we started supporting the mothers after they had the babies as well. So in the last 28 years of existence, we have helped over 600 women. Things have started changing as well, too. We used to be, even as when Safe Haven started, we used to have most of our clientele being teens that came in. Under 18 women came in, had their babies. We would help them get on their feet. And we slowly started getting more and more adults coming in. A few years ago, we realized that most of our clientele, if not all, were adults over the age of 18. So the state came in, because anytime you run a home with anyone under 18, you come under state guidelines. No matter what you do, you fall under those regulations. The state came in and said, you guys can't have under 18 and over 18 in the same home. So we had to make a decision as an organization, what are we going to do? So we went with over 18 because that was the majority of our population. So we no longer now can take those teen pregnancies. And unfortunately, in Douglas County, there is no place really for a teen pregnant mom to go anymore. One of our dreams, if I had my unlimited supply of finances and staff and energy, what the big thing I would have is being able to have two homes, being able to have our over 18, and then having something for our under 18, for our teens that are homeless, who have nowhere to go. The stigma of teen pregnancy is not there anymore, but there the homelessness of youth. There's quite a huge homeless population throughout the schools that are couch surfing, so homelessness is starting to look different. It's a lot of couch surfing, moving from home to home to home with nowhere to go. So ideally, we would love to be able to branch out to that. We have room for 8 mothers and their babies. We provide the basic everything that they need to live there. They usually have a roommate. They get to learn sometimes the joys and the struggles of community living. If you went to college anytime, you either love or you hate your roommate. And sometimes, I mean, that's even with your spouse as well, too, and your children. You either love or you hate them, and sometimes it goes back and forth. So our ladies get to experience that, too, the different personalities that come in. Our main mission and goal is to provide a safe home with a hope for a better future, one mother and one baby at a time. Our goal is, I kind of always like it, we're about running a marathon, not a sprint. We could go out there and help tons of women all at once and not make any lasting change, or we could help one mother at a time make that lasting change that's going to affect generations. And that's our goal, is not to see a quick change that will last maybe 2 months, 3 months, or while they're at safe haven. We want to see something that changes their life, changes the course of their life for eternity. That's our main goal. At our home, we provide not only the safe home, but classes. We have women coming in who have, just through their life, they've never learned to cook. We've had one that we actually had to teach how to sweep a floor because they've never had to clean up for themselves because they were raised in an environment of chaos. They raised their children in an environment of chaos. Their parents probably were raised in an environment of chaos, and they don't learn those simple things that some of us just take for granted. Cooking, cleaning, how do you make a grocery list? How do you stay within a budget? A lot of our women have come in with very poor, say that their chooser is broken. Their ability to choose a man in their life is very bad. And they go from bad relationship to bad relationship to bad relationship. We've had women come in that have been in a relationship that their significant other has destroyed their credit. So learning how do you budget, how do you put a block on your Social Security number so that someone can't use it? What do you do to get yourself to that place where you're not the victim anymore and that you have some control of your life? We offer classes. Rita teaches a good class in boundaries. So learning that, how do you set boundaries for yourself? We have people that come in and we've done infant massage, we've done CPR. There's some really good classes I wouldn't mind taking. Our whole point is that when the women leave this home, they will have a set of skills that can really carry them forward and that will change the course of their future and their children. We partner a lot with community agencies that come in because there's no point to reinvent the wheel. If there's somebody out there that's willing to do something for us, for our girls, it's great. There's a new organization that offers some faith-based counseling called FARA, and we started partnering with them. They come in and they're gonna start offering one-on-one counseling sessions for our ladies. A lot of times, with any counseling, it's the same happen there, is you open up to what you want to share. So sometimes our ladies will go to drug and alcohol counseling or mental health counseling and will only share what they want to share. When you're in your home environment, sometimes you can't hide as much and you can't hide behind what is happening and more things come out. So we really want to offer that counseling for them to really get to the root of why they're in the situation to begin with. And the other big thing, part of our mission, is aftercare. So several years ago, we had a lady that graduated. She was received housing, was told by the agency that she was with that she had to move out and go to her housing. So she moved in. We got a call later that night from her saying, I'm in my apartment. I've got a place. I have no food. I have no furniture. Just me and my child on the floor. I don't know what to do. And that's a recipe for relapse. You're in safe and sober housing where everyone around you is in recovery. Some of those people around you are people you used to use with. And you're here with no hope, nothing going on. So we contacted Child Welfare and said, what's going on? They said, we don't have the finances or even the ability to check up after this. Once they're in their home, our caseloads, we're overwhelmed. We can't do anything about it. So our program manager, Sarah, she goes, this can't happen anymore. I can't do this. We can't put a year of work into a woman to see her go into a home and then everything fall apart. She's gonna go back to the thing that was once comfortable to her. So Sarah developed the aftercare program where they can stay, we say 3 to 6 months. Some girls stay longer. We don't really kick them out if they wanna be part of our agency still. We wanna be able to make sure that we have that extra support. We help provide furniture for them, making sure that they come to a house that's fully set up and ready for them. They can come back and access classes at the home. We have ladies from a church that come in and do a Bible study. They can come back and do Bible study. And Sarah even meets with some of these ladies on a one-on-one basis once a week to make sure, okay, are you following your plan? Are you staying clean and sober? Do you have a sponsor? What's going on? And checking in with these ladies to give that added support. We all, when we're struggling, could use that added support, having someone to come alongside us and hold our hand and just be that comforting shoulder. We all could use that. So that's our goal with the aftercare, is to add that added support to our ladies. Who we serve, since we have 8 beds, I kind of think of as we divide our beds in half. Four of our beds are, we call community beds, basically a referral from almost anyone. We have homeless, we have people that are fleeing domestic violence. We have taken women in that are escaping sex trafficking. We have taken drug addiction. We work with ADAPT, Hope Clinic has made referrals, UCAN, WIC, doctor's offices. Anyone that needs that help. The only criteria, you have to have a child 2 years or under. So some of our women come in with a baby. And they've already had their baby, but they've had nowhere to go. And they realize that they continue down this path that they're going to enter the system. Our goal is to save women from entering into that foster care system, to enter into that cycle that they can get into. About 3 years ago, we were offered a contract with Child Welfare. It took the board a lot of prayer and consideration at that time to say, well, you know, what should we do? Because it's when you enter in with the state, sometimes there can become some red tape that can come in. But we looked at it as an opportunity not only to secure some finances, but also to start reaching a population that we could not reach before. So we now have a contract with Child Welfare. We are the only return to parent facility in Southern Oregon. So what that means is that if a mom is starting to do good, they can come to Safe Haven with their child. We offer that 24-hour supervision, and they will end up getting their child back. Children who are raised in foster care are 50% more likely to have children raised in foster care. So getting we have some wonderful foster care parents out there. There's some brokenness of it, and there's some really great points of the foster care system. But ultimately, if you can have a mother who is clean and sober, who is safe raising their child, the statistics for this child to continue on with a sober, clean life is much higher than growing up this foster care system. So that is one of our goals. A lot of our women that come through Child Welfare are involved with probation. There becomes a lot more stronger clientele that we get with that. Many have co-occurring disorders, which that means that they not only have drug addiction issues they're dealing with, but they also have mental health issues. And those start coming together, and those become a lot more difficult to deal with, but somebody has got to do it. It's easy to say, you know what, we don't want to deal with this population because my stress level can't handle it too much sometimes, but someone has to reach this population. So we've had some questions that say, well, you guys have become too secular. You're not the Christian organization. So that does come up. So when we incorporated, we did not incorporate as a religious organization. And the reason is because of the money, the finances, and how we run the organization, we had to be limited on who we take. We are, though, a Christian organization, as in our leadership is Christian. We're the state of Oregon, we are an equal opportunity employer. We can't discriminate, or else I'd be using Ron again as I'm in court being sued. So we don't discriminate, but it just so happens the ones that are interested, and we pray about this, we want godly leadership in our organization. Because ultimately, we all have that end goal, is to see people come to Jesus. That's our goal. We want to see lives transformed, and ultimately, there's one way that lives can be transformed. So our organization, though it is secular, it is very Christian-run. Our board meetings always start with prayer. We really want to keep our main focus. So we are in the world, but we're not of the world. That is our goal. As drug addiction and violence and homelessness and lack of mental health treatment increases, our clientele is becoming increasingly harder. The issue is when we as a society do not value the sanctity of life, people stop valuing their own life. They see that they have no significance. Everyone else tells them that they're worthless. Everyone else says there's no value in life. So what's their worth? They have no worth. When you tell them that there's a God who loves them, who values them in their deepest pit of despair, they don't believe it. And that is our goal. There is a value in your life. To speak value, to speak words of life into these women's lives, that you're not done yet. That though the society has come and told you that you're worthless, we believe there's worth in you. I can't believe how many times Sarah and I have been told, even by the agency or told by someone, we're getting you this referral, but this person really has no hope. This is their last chance. We don't think they're going to make it. And Sarah and I, We kind of like to buck the odds on that. We maybe have a little oppositional defiance. I don't know what it is, but we want to kind of prove them wrong. Because it's not because Sarah and I can change, because we have a link to somebody who can change their lives. Recently, if you've been following some of the local news, there's been a string of drug deaths in the last about week and a half. And I was following, I like to follow a lot of the scanner pages. Unfortunately, mugshots, you see some people that you don't want to see there, but we keep up on what's going on. And I remember looking at my husband saying, this is not good. I mean, this is just another call out on the scanner page for another overdose. And I said, there's something not good out there. We put a warning out to all of our ladies because Christmas time is the worst time for relapse, holiday season. So putting a warning out, guys, in our aftercare, if you're going to relapse, come talk to us. This is not a good time. So it came out that there's tainted drugs out there, and that's why people are dying left and right. So I was kind of following some of those pages and what people said, and there's, you know, comments like, why can't they just stop? If they really, you know, they really wanted, if they were worth something, they just stop using. There's more to addiction than just stopping the use. They could stop the use, but ultimately there's something with inside of them, inside of all of us. We all can look at some of our addiction and vices. You're never going to see me really give up coffee because I need coffee in the morning. And I mean, if I had to, I'd give it up, but ultimately, we all have our vices. Some are worse than the other. And those the bad actions is what we got to stop. But there's got to get down to the point, and that's what our point at Safe Haven is, get down to the inmost being. Why are you using? Why are you continuing the cycle of abuse? Why are you picking the wrong men over and over again? What is the issue that's down below? That's the core of how to stop drug addiction, is getting to the core being. So there's more than just stopping. And I read something else that someone said, oh, thank God this person died. I was reading a story about a father who was having to do CPR on his 21-year-old son as he overdosed. And I was crying just reading this on Facebook because I thought, this poor father has been, the thing he feared the most just happened, and he watched his son pass away because of his addiction. And someone reported, goes, well, one less drug addict on the street, who cares? And I thought, that's the problem, the sanctity of life. I mean, I look at that poor boy, the demons he was facing, the addiction, that was a young man that Jesus died for. Jesus died to save that person. That life had value to it. He made some terrible mistakes, but they had to come. At the end of his life, he had to come to face to face at the end of his in eternity with his decisions. And to me, that's a sobering thought, and that's what kind of motivates me on this, is on doing Safe Haven and the work that we do, is these people are going to come to a face to face reality at the end of their life. What are we doing to not only we're changing just their eternity, but also their life here. We got to be able to change the wholeness of people, giving them a life more abundantly. The value that God puts on life is just not for here on earth, but he puts such a great value that he gave his son. He created a way for us to go to heaven. And that's our goal. I will always root for the underdog. Sarah and I will always say that. We will go for the underdog. The person you tell us that can't make it, we will believe that Jesus can do something in their life. We believe that through the work that we do at Safe Haven, that lives can change. My son is a huge Ducks fan. And so my husband, he became a Ducks fan. I like his, I'm not so much a Ducks fan. I can honestly really care less either way. I'm not diehard either way. But I became a Ducks fan because I like my husband's sweaters, and they're really comfortable. So therefore, he doesn't have Beavers sweaters. I wear Ducks sweaters. So beforehand, I used to always cheer for the Ducks. Now, I may offend someone with this, or I always cheer for the Beavers. I may offend probably Steve Nelson by this, but I cheered for the Beavers because I always wanted a good underdog. When you go into Corvallis, they have like a sign up, we beat the Ducks one time, and it's on a billboard. So they're excited. I mean, it's like that. More than once, but the one time was on the billboard. They are proud of that fact. We did it. And so I used to cheer for them because it's like, you kind of want to see, you know, like the underdog. I mean, unfortunately, though, when, you know, the Ducks can go to the Rose Bowl and the Beavers can't, I want them to win, the Ducks to win. Sorry, Steve. But I love a good underdog story. I love to see that lives are changed, that hope is restored, that women are making this complete turnaround. Our goal at Safe Haven is to take that last chance person that everyone has given up on, share and show the love of Jesus. So it's not just sharing and saying words, it is showing through our actions. Our lives have to reflect that call that God has put on our lives. There was a father of faith that said, you know, share Jesus and when possible, use words. I want my life to reflect Jesus in everything that I do, that my love that's coming out will show Jesus. And then I can share that. Just a simple word then can really share that what I believe is going forth in my life. I love to see someone that failed make it. So I'm going to share a little bit also about how I came to Safe Haven. So I was born in Roseburg, graduated from Umpqua Valley Christian School before they were at Dixonville and had a nice campus. We were out in Winston in the trailers, kind of a UVC, it was a whole different school. I gave my life to the Lord at 16, renewed it at 20. My story about God is he was a God who pursued and loved me and gave me many, many chances. So my goal in life is the grace that was given to me is the same grace that I give to others. It's the same restoration I'd like to see in others. I've been attending New Life Church in Roseburg for 17 years now. I work for a while as a drug and alcohol counselor in early 2000. Safe Haven runs by grants. A lot of nonprofits run by grants. And the problem with grants is they go away. So in 2006, my job at ADAPT was going away, and I was thinking, well, what's next? Long stories, I've always had a heart to go to India. I decided, I got an offer to go to India and work in an orphanage. I was in my early 20s, thought, what the heck, why not go? Ended up meeting a guy there, marrying him. This Wednesday, we'll be married 13 years, so you got your anniversary. And Ron, I wanted to give you a little bit of encouragement. If you feel bad, so when we got married, the pastor also forgot the marriage certificate. After we asked him several times, he's an Indian but lives in America. We asked him several times, can you legally marry in India? No problem. Forgot the marriage certificate. For 2 weeks, we asked him for the marriage certificate. He left India, found out that we weren't legally married. So he couldn't marry us. So we celebrate January 15th as a day we got married. We actually legally got married 2 months later. So you guys feel better about where you're at now. So like I said, I had three children. We have a ministry we run in India. We're a part of their pastoral team at our church. But all that's a story for another time. So because sometimes the ministry doesn't always pay, so you have to find secular work. Both my husband and I are bivocational. We both work and do ministry. I've worked in the human service field and doing ministry for 18 years. It's now been 3 years ago, I had to stop working because my youngest was a baby and we lost childcare. And when we did the math, it was no point to work. By the time I worked, I'd be paying it all to childcare. So I was a stay-at-home mom for 2 years. And then usually mainly my oldest started growing too fast and his clothing became a huge bill just trying to keep up with him. We started orthodontics this week. So you know how kids are. Kids get expensive. So we started looking as my youngest was starting to go to preschool that I needed to find a part-time job. We were looking at me working graveyard because childcare is a horrible thing. Our girls face this every single day. Trying to find quality childcare that doesn't cost you your whole life savings is impossible to find. So I prayed that God would find me a job that fit my passion, that was flexible with my kids' schedule, and if I really had my deepest dream, I would want something that was involved with ministry. Honestly, I didn't know if I would really find all that, but I was praying Psalms 37, 3-4, says, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land, feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of the heart. When we trust him, our desires will start aligning with his heart, and they'll come to pass. So Safe Haven side of the story was in February 2018, I got a call from who was then the president of the board saying, would you like a job at Safe Haven? At that point, our church was in transition to past leadership. We were interim pastors. We're getting ready to lead a trip to India. I said, there is just no, I can't add one more thing to the plate. Nope, I can't do anything. So they came to September, and that's when I was starting to look for a job. And I thought, well, I'll just send her a text and say, what positions do you have available at Safe Haven? What I didn't know is at that point, Safe Haven was about 2 years. They had an executive director and then didn't, and then had it and did it. And the board thought that they could try to be executive director for a while, and then that lasted, a month? Not even that. And they went, no, that's a bad choice. We need somebody in there. So they've been looking, and they couldn't find anyone. So the board chair at that time, the morning, she was a little upset, kind of venting to God and said, I'm sick of looking for executive director. Can you just send someone to me? I texted her 2 hours later. So she replied with, and I actually went back, I still have the text, I was looking last night, she replied with, wow, that's interesting, and I'll call you in a little bit. And so I found out later that she said she literally fell out of her chair. She was reading that, she fell out of her chair, and her family asked, she goes, I've never had God respond to me and answer me like this. So after a couple months going through all the vetting process, I became the executive director at Safe Haven. My verse, I kind of had my verse for the year, and that verse that year was Ephesians 3:20. Now unto him who's able to do exceedingly abundantly beyond what we ask or think, according to the power that wants to work in us. God can do more than you can even imagine in and through you. He can do so much more through that sphere of influence. So I was really grateful kind of how God orchestrated and brought me to Safe Haven, and I think we've worked out pretty good. I've lasted over a year. So, and now that Steve's president, he's very happy to have an executive director, and he didn't have to fill that role. So you guys have been talking a lot about the sanctity of life, and I love that topic because in the society that we're in now, life, there's not a huge value on life. Or if we value life, we value a certain kind of life. I mean, if we're all honest, we all have our own prejudice or hesitation. If I'm walking downtown Roseburg at a certain time at night, my purse is in front, I have my eye, I'm watching what I'm going through. I'm not going to be the one that's going to stop because I have my prejudice. Having worked in downtown Roseburg, I know what happens down there at certain hours of the night. So we all have our prejudice, but God has such an open view of his love of life. If I could just capture part of that and have the love for people that he does, I would see such a transformation in our town. Our desire is to not only help the child, but also help the woman see the value of their child's life. That their child is more than their instant gratification. It's really, it's devastating. We've had women that come through that choose drug addiction over their child. And it's a very hard thing to see. We had a woman come in once. When she came in, she said, if I got to choose between my child or my boyfriend, I'm going to choose my boyfriend. And it's just a heartbreaking. But she stayed there with us for 1 year. Say now, she's more likely to choose her child over her boyfriend. She still struggles in that relationship, but she sees more value of her life. She's not going to be as quick to give up her child like she used to. It's a slow transformation, but a lot of these women won't value because they themselves don't think they have a value, and they see their value through the eyes of a man. Who am I with? Or who is my sphere of influence? The child is just the added thing that came on from it. So one of the arguments that's always lodged against pro-life are those who declare the sanctity of life. It's you care more about the life in the womb than you do about the life outside the womb. And I genuinely believe that's a lie. But there is some loud voices out there in our pro-life world that almost make it sound like we care about the life only in there because once they come out, then, well, they got themselves into that problem. They need to get themselves out. And we have those voices. And sometimes I think they're louder than the voices that are within the church. I think in general, the church values the life outside the womb. But there's a handful of people that just are really loud that feed into that lie. I had a friend that was talking to me about when she was young, she got pregnant. Her brother was in ministry. She attended his church, and she went in to get an abortion. And she just sat there, and she fled the abortion clinic and said, I can't do this. So she went in as an unwed mother to the church. And mind you, this is about 20 years ago, so I really believe things have changed in general. But the church, she got a lot of questions like, well, why did you get in this mess? What, you're unwed. You don't have a husband? What did you do? And she goes, I just didn't have the strength in me to say, do you know that 2 weeks ago I was sitting in an abortion clinic about ready to give my child up? And I've chosen life, but she didn't feel that support. And so that's some of our goals. Is some of our ladies that come here, they're not, by the point they come to Safe Haven, they're not thinking, am I going to have an abortion or not? They've chosen to keep life. So we are going to support them as they've made that decision to keep life and to not abort their babies. We're going to support the decision. Some of our mothers with child welfare, they come into the system. We've had some that have had 7 children in the foster care, and they're pregnant with their 8th. So if I don't have Jesus in my heart, do I want to deal with the system? Why? You know, that would be the thing, is why not abort? Why do you have that child? So that's our goal, is to say, you know what, there's life there. We're going to support you. Now, it's not going to be easy. Child welfare is more than likely not going to give you the child, or if so, it's going to be with a lot of strings attached. But our goal is to support these women in the decision they made to keep their baby, to raise their baby, and to give them the tools. Safe Haven is proof that we care about life outside the womb. So if somebody says that to you, well, you don't care about life outside the womb, you can look at what we do at Safe Haven. We are that life outside of the womb. It's easy, though, to see the other side. When I look at the other side, we say, well, they're the enemy. You know, the people on the opposite aisle of the political party than you. The system, society, drug dealers, the judicial system. We can name 101 things that's the enemy. Well, if this was changed, then things would be better. But that's not who the enemy is. None of this is the enemy. 2 Corinthians 10:3 through 4 says, we are human, but we don't wage war as humans do. We use God's mighty weapons, not worldly weapons, to knock down the strongholds of human reasoning and destroy false arguments. When we battle like the world battles, we will lose. 100%. 2 Corinthians 4:4 says that Satan has blinded the minds of those who don't believe. So our enemy is not the people who make the accusations against the sanctity of life are the ones who destroy life, the ones who the system, they're not even the women who choose drugs and relationships over their children. We have an enemy that is coming against the sanctity of life. He hates life. He's going to come to destroy life. We have seen this time and time again. We have seen women come out of addiction, fall back into relapse. We have seen this cycle of abuse that comes in. There is so much damage that some of these women have in their hearts and their lives through years of abuse. And we know that there is an enemy. It says that, you know, it talks about in 1 Peter 5:8 that our enemies are roaring lions seeking who he can devour. And we see that at Safe Haven, that he has an agenda against our mothers, against the babies. So we want to try to war at Safe Haven, not as the world wars. We want to find a different way of doing it. He will use any means possible to destroy, but through policies, through people, through substances. But we at Safe Haven, we want to find a different way to do this battle. And that's why we can even use what the world has given us, systems the world's given us, child welfare system. There's amazing workers that are out there. They do some great jobs. I would never wish that job on my worst enemy, because the caseload and the amount of work and the things they see is horrific. But we want to be able to take that system, the broken system of the world, and be able to turn it for good and take those lives that we're given. We're given the opportunity to invest in these lives, these ladies. We are the last chance. We are starting to get the hardest of the hardest. We're getting the ones that they don't even want to deal with anymore. And we're watching Jesus starting to do some transformation. And it's not just this, sometimes it's not just this instant light bulb moment. It's a slowly, day by day change. When I came on, there's always one that's going to rock the boat a little bit at the home. That's going to cause us a couple more wrinkles or gray hairs. And so we had one that was going to rock the boat a little bit when I first got on, and we were just unsure. My first month there, we were in meetings doing some action plans to make sure that she was going to follow the rules. I'm going to say, like, through the course of events, this mom is sober. She's on her own house now, doing a wonderful job, a wonderful single mama to her baby boy. We have seen this complete change. She checks in with Sarah at least how many times a day? 3 or 4 times a day, checking in. Hey, I'm going to the library. Hey, I'm going here. Hey, I'm going there. It's a slow change, and all of a sudden, when you step back after a couple months, you say, wow, that is not the same woman that we had 6 months ago at our home. We have seen this change through day in, through day out, putting into their lives. It is amazing. It is exciting. That's when you get excited to see what has happened. One way to wage this war on heavenly terms is to not only care about the unborn life, but invest in the lives of the mothers. Our babies, like I said, are really easy to love. They're really cute. I mean, we had a bunch of toddlers. That was a little stressful when you have like 5 or 6 toddlers running around, and I think I heard the things, I don't get paid enough for this. So those get a little stressful. But in all reality, you have a little tiny baby in your hand that has done nothing wrong. Just got born into some really, really unfortunate events. It's not hard to love these babies. Sometimes the moms are a little hard to love, I'll tell you that. And we have our struggles, but we can see that once we change the lives of a mom, generations are going to change. When I came to Safe Haven, actually my first day, we were sitting in a meeting with this lady, and I've been working in social service well enough. I knew who she was. She knew who I was. And I remember we were sitting in the meeting, and they were working through some things, and she's like, I promise, I've never lied to any of you. She's like, wait, you? I used to lie to you all the time. So that kind of explains she wasn't my favorite person back then. I've even told her that. Yeah, I didn't really like you because she was so far into her addiction. When she came to Safe Haven, they said that she had no hope. She was pregnant with her 5th child. All 4 boys were in foster care. I mean, we're talking to the tune of millions of dollars that we were paying in taxpayer dollars into foster care. This mom has all 5 children out of foster care. Her case was closed. She's a regular volunteer at Safe Haven. I'm friends with her on Facebook. I actually like her now. She's a really great person. Her life has changed. She has, and the big key is, what she'll attribute a lot of her change to is the work at Safe Haven and being introduced to a Jesus who loves her. She's not perfect. She's still going to struggle at times, but she is making such great strides. So with one word, God spoke the world into existence. And it takes one word to change the course of a life of a person. But not only for the mother, like I said, the generations to come. We were recently talking with a woman that was struggling, and she was a bit of aloof. She's always been a little strong. She's got a hard exterior. When you're out there in the streets and you're doing those things, you've got to have that shell, because you cannot let these people in that are in there. And to watch her melt, and she actually gave me a hug, and I was almost like, I don't know what to do, because you've never hugged before. To see that change, and all it took for me to say is, I believe in you. I believe you can change. We're going to, here at Safe Haven, we believe that you're going to have change, that this is not, that your present future, your present situation is not going to determine your future. We believe your future is different than what's presently going on now. And that's our goal. Our goal is to break down barriers to success here on earth. So these ladies lack education. They can't find jobs. They struggle with their sobriety. Like I said, childcare is horrific. Our ladies cannot find childcare. It's very hard out there. And you'll see things on Facebook all the time. You see these people, oh, well, hey, I'll watch your kid for you. When you work in a system, and I can't, because of confidentiality, I can't get on Facebook saying, please do not let that lady watch your child. There are some pretty sketchy childcare facilities out there right now. They also, we can't find housing. We've had women stuck in our home for months and months and months on end because they cannot find housing out there. So there's a lot of barriers. Those are things that we, our goal at Safe Haven in the future, I really want to have a vision. Our goal is to be able to maybe some point fill some needs that the community has by generating, and that'll help generate income into Safe Haven, but one of which is to having a place for an apartment or something for our ladies to transition into, a place for a drop-in childcare thing. Those are our big goals out there. And I don't want to worry Steve that I'm planning on doing that anytime soon. But if anyone has a free apartment complex they'd like to donate, come see me in the back. So we have those big goals. We want to break down those physical barriers, because once we start breaking down those physical barriers, we get to the heart of the issue of why the ladies came to Safe Haven to begin with. What brought them to their lowest point? When they come to Safe Haven, most of them are at the bottom of the bottom. Unfortunately, some have to go even further down, and that's hard for us to see. But we want to be there. We want to see that when women who renew their faith in Jesus, we've seen them some amazing things happen in their lives. We wage war by offering hope to these mothers. These women are not offered hope in the world. We have the greatest hope here as believers in Jesus. We have such a great hope. And we're able then to go out to Safe Haven to these moms and offer hope. We can give them a second chance. We can love the ones that are hard to love, and God will work through us to bring change in their lives. Sometimes they don't change. We had one recently that came in, and we had to make the hard decision. Sarah and I talked. We had to make the hard decision to allow the child to go back into foster care because of situations that were arising. And it was very hard. We were there as a pretty legal event going on, and I remember looking over the lives. Well, first, I remember going in there and praying, God, what did we do wrong? I was going to fight for this one. And I tell the moms all the time, I will fight for you, but I will not fight harder than you. So you've got to kind of meet me a little bit and fight with me. And in this situation, the mom did not fight. The mom chose another lifestyle over the child. And it's heartbreaking. I said, God, what do we do different? And God showed me, he's like, you did nothing wrong. This baby was born clean and sober. The baby was born safe. The baby is now going to go into a quality foster care system. And the baby is safe. You guys, this is a success, not a failure. And so Sarah and I, we were saying goodbye and kind of making sure everything was done over. We were able just to pray over the child and to say, you know what? We don't know. We may never see this again. Maybe the mom will come back and get her life together at some point. But at the end, that's our main thing, is to be able to keep these babies safe. That's our goal, too. It's not only give that mom the future, but if the mom doesn't want the good future, you have to want recovery. You have to want Jesus. You have to want to change your life for it to work. So when the mom doesn't, we are able then to support those babies and be able to give them the best future for their life. So the question for you guys is, how can you help us as Safe Haven battle? The first thing is prayer. We could use prayer. I'm a full believer that prayer can change things. Our moms need prayer. Our moms and our babies, they desperately need prayer. We need prayer that change, that their hearts would be open, that their change can happen for both here and for eternity. Our staff needs prayer. Our staff is running here and there. We have so many appointments now. We're in court a couple times a week all the time. Like I said, our caseload is getting more and more in depth. I think in the last 2 months we've been subpoenaed 6 times to testify in courts on behalf of our mothers because the cases are getting more and more involved. So those things take a real toll on our staff. I tell people all the time to work at Safe Haven, we will never make the top 10 employers or even the top 100 employers of Douglas County. I think we're the bottom. We're not the best employer in the world. We don't pay the best. We don't offer any benefits. All of our staff are there not to make money, but to make a difference in the lives of their women. I have more problem with my staff working and not clocking in for it than I've never had a problem with time theft. Because I've had one mom, and I said, one of our staff, I said, hey, I know for a fact you're there. And she goes, prove it. Prove I was there. You can't prove I worked. And so I volunteered my time. You can't pay me for that. I won't let you. She argued me out of holiday pay. She didn't want holiday pay. She took her time away. And that's the staff that we have there. They want to donate. They really feel that this is a drive for them. But at the same time, they need strength to get through it, because there's not every day are they going home thinking, gosh, I love my job. I got the world's best job. No, they don't always think that. So they need strength. Sarah and I need a lot of prayer for wisdom. We make a lot of big decisions that can really, and even the board of directors, that really affect the course of mothers' lives, children's lives, this organization. So we need prayer. You can also volunteer. We are always looking for volunteers, whether it's working at the house or helping at the office. We always could use fundraiser. If you're thinking, you know, I can't dedicate a whole lot of time, but man, when there's a fundraiser, I would love to pull together and help the fundraising. We always could use some volunteers. So we'll be in the back. Rita is our volunteer extraordinaire. She tends to know. So if you really want to volunteer, definitely get a hold of Rita, and she can help you, direct you with that. The other way to get involved is to partner. If you follow us on Facebook, every month we put out our needs. We used to have our website that have lists everything we could ever need. And I looked at it, I'm like, it's too overwhelming. I don't know what you need. So we've divided it up each month into small things that we could use. And if we stock up, then we could just rotate through those things. So if you follow us on Facebook, the first of every month we put out, this is what we're collecting. This month we're collecting, we needed light bulbs. I like LED because then I don't have to pay as much in the electricity cost. But we are doing LED, we're doing medications like Tylenol, Advil, that sort of thing, because cold and flu season is right here. We just cannot do Sudafed or alcohol-based medications due to the girls' restrictions they have with the courts. But those are little things, those are practical ways. If you're always shopping, and I always tell people, they say, well, what can I buy? Well, whatever you love to clean your house with, we would love to clean our house with too. Just throw an extra one in your cart, and we would love to be, those are some practical, easy ways to get involved. The other way is through our 325 Club. That is 300 people giving $25 a month. One third of our budget is composed of our donors. And as of right now, we have around 25 people in our 325 Club. So we're, you know, 275 short of fulfilling it. So one of our goals is to be able to boost up some of our 325 Club. When I know that I have some consistent money coming on, I'm not calling Steve saying, okay, how are we going to make payroll this month? I got to figure this out. We would like to be able to, or how, you know, for example, our van is, I think, a 1998. It's pretty old. I think the mechanic said, stop bringing it to me. I'm sick of fixing it, is basically the words I got. Like, I can't do anymore. Like, you can't, you know, it's a sinking ship. You can't patch it. Let it sink. So those little things are also, if we get extra money, we're able to then take these unforeseen needs that we have and be able to meet them. So if you're interested in becoming one of our faithful donors, we have a 325 card in the back. We have ways that you can get involved. I'm really thankful that you guys value that sanctity of life. You've invited me here to speak about Safe Haven, because I think when we catch the heart of the Father and we value the life he created, we will become his hands and feet, and we'll see the change that in the lives we minister to. I think that sometimes that we look at social organizations, and I know a lot of people say, oh, this organization or this government entity is like too overbearing, but man, I think if Christians got empowered and did the work of Jesus, they would run out of work. We would start seeing that lives are changed, the sick are being healed. We'll start seeing some real change in the lives. And so I'm really encouraged by this fellowship that's come together and say, you know, we're going to invest in Safe Haven. We're going to invest in seeing lives restored. So thank you so much for partnering with us and to making providing a safe home with a hope for a better future, one mother and a baby at a time. Thank you.